From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
Like, there's a massive difference between the questions, would you use this and would you pay to use this? Huge difference. And I think that's what people kind of fail to remember when they're building a business.
I'm Connor Carney, and that's the voice of Dan Hobbs, co-founder and CEO of Protex, a software company using artificial intelligence to track safety for industrial employees. Dan and his co-founder Kieran are recent graduates of Y Combinator, a startup incubator based in San Francisco, boasting an enviable track record of finding the next big companies in tech. Other notable alumni include Airbnb, Dropbox, Reddit, and Stripe. In this conversation, we cover a host of topics from Dan's experience applying to and going through the Y Combinator program, raising money from some of the world's most successful and well-known entrepreneurs, to Dan's first startup, which he started at the tender age of 22 and sold just a few years later in 2019. I started off by asking Dan to walk me through the concept behind their new business, Protex.
Protex is camera software that identifies danger before it becomes a real problem for the industrial workforce. So we very much deal with health and safety. And the reason we're doing what we're doing is safety at the moment, and safety as like a concept or as an industry, is incredibly reactive. And what I mean by that is usually someone has to get hurt before something's done about it. So whether it be, you know, getting hit by a forklift, whether it be, you know, injuring their back when they're picking up a box or a stock or something like that. But usually something happens and then something's done about it. And that's just how health and safety has run for the last 100 years or so. So what we do at Protex is we don't look at the reactive sense of safety. We look at it from the proactive sense, Protex. So the whole means of that is that, or the reason we're doing it, 85% of accidents actually are caused by behavior or behavior changes. And we help to identify the behaviors that lead to the accidents rather than the accidents themselves. So you can get involved and stop the behaviors from happening, because if you stop them from happening, you essentially stop the accident from happening. And the whole idea came around was Kieran, my co-founder, his auntie was working as an operations manager, and she was called on site one day because a guy died. They thought it was a freak accident. I won't go into the actual injury itself, but it was relatively gruesome. But when they looked back through the CCTV, they saw that the behavior that actually led to the accident was happening, you know, quite a lot. That's kind of where we come in. So we can help to identify and stop those things.
How does it work? What's the system or what's the process by which you can proactively see whether someone is acting in a way that might lead to an injury or might lead to, you know, death?
Sure. Yeah. So there's lots of things we can do. So they kind of are standardized across lots of industries. The cool thing about health and safety for us anyway, is it's a real horizontal industry. So it's not a vertical. So it's a vertical in its own sense, but it works across multiple things like manufacturing, ports, logistics, warehousing, all that kind of stuff. We, from the proactive sense, we use artificial intelligence and machine learning through their existing CCTV infrastructure to identify the behavior. So things like bad lifting for, if they're lifting a box all the time. So they're kind of, that's a perfect example, because they're injuries that happen over time. They're not kind of instantaneous. You constantly are lifting correctly. Your form's really bad. Same as like if you're in the gym or something like that, if your form's bad, you're going to get injured. So we can help them to identify that if there's a high risk of something happening, or things like speed of vehicles. So people like flying around a particular area of the factory floor. And the thing about health and safety teams is their job is to protect people and keep people safe. And the current way they do that is it's a lot of it's based off assumptions. So they have to walk around the facility and try to say, hey, you know, hey, Connor, you're not doing this correctly. You got to fix this, or show me how you're lifting this. But if you're standing in front of me, I'm going to do it correctly. Or if I see you, I'm going to do it correctly. So there's no real understanding, I guess, or deeper understanding or evidence-based understanding of safety. And that's kind of what we give our customers.
How do you give it to them specifically? Is it, it's a piece of software that essentially connects to their CCTV cameras, which will feed back the information in real time. Is that roughly what it is?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. So they log in and they can see straight away what's happening and how, you know, how big the risk is, or what risks are there, or how non-compliant people are being with the rules. And then they can go and structure their safety decisions based off the evidence rather than assumptions.
Let's talk about your background for a second, because I think most people, if they were speaking to their aunt and she was to say to them, oh, someone died in the factory, I don't think the first thing they think about is, where's the opportunity here? And I have a competency in this exact type of software. It's not where someone would go. So I'm interested about how we get from that to how you ended up starting this business. Was there something, I suppose you already understood software prior to this. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Sure, yeah, really good question. So I guess we like to reverse engineer things at Protex, which we've done across quite a number of things. So one of them was the actual idea for the business. So we, for a bit of background, so I had just exited my first company in 2019, called Better Examinations, and was doing an earnout for that, which is essentially, for those who don't know it, it's essentially like you stick around for a little while and you have targets to hit. So they give you X amount of cash up front and you earn the rest. So I was finishing off that. And then Ciarán was doing a computer vision PhD. And I've known Ciarán for you know, 11 years. We're really, really good friends, even before all this thing. We basically had a solution before product or before problem. So we had computer vision and he's a huge believer in it. I'm a huge believer in it. And we wanted to put it somewhere. So we first started looking at, you know, shopping malls or shopping centers and seeing if we could look at crowd flows moving through that, which is a cool idea. And it still is a cool idea. And there's companies that do it. But it was like, you know, it was fine. Like it was, were you changing people's lives? Probably not. And then we started looking at drone security. So one idea we had, hopefully no one steals this, but one idea we had was a portable CCTV camera. So like if you got robbed, rather than like depending on the CCTV camera, a drone would be dispatched and would follow the perpetrator, you know, for a mile or something like that, which is good. But again, that was a really tough one. And that was a longer term play, something we could still do for sure. And then this thing came around when, you know, we were talking to Ciarán's relative and I was sending it. And straight away, we were like, that's something we could definitely help out with.
You mentioned there that you had a company prior to this. How did that start? What age were you when all that started happening, and how long did you run that for?
Sure, yeah. So that was a cool company. So that was called Better Examinations. And it's funny, like I think a lot of people who do startups tend to do an education startup to begin with for some reason. I don't know why that is. I think maybe it's just because you're coming from education and you tend to know it, but everyone seems to do one in their lifetime. So the reason that came around was really, it kind of started as a joke. So if you remember doing the Leaving Cert, there was a website called examinations.ie. And examinations.ie is this really crappy government website that is just pretty much like an archive for all past papers. Everybody uses past papers I'm studying. So start off like that. So that was examinations.ie. So we're like, we'll do something like Better Examinations.ie. So that's where the company name came around, which did quite well. And I got like 100,000 users in the space of like a year and a half. I was still in college while doing it. We brought that to universities and said, hey, we've got this really cool past paper system. Do you guys want your own version? Because we were in Trinity at the time and they had a really crappy one as well. So we looked at that and then they said, yeah, that's really cool, but can you do this thing called exam management? And we were like, sure. Yeah. Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh, exam management. Yeah. Everybody does that. That's a cool, yeah, that cool thing, exam management. We didn't have a clue what it was. We ended up going back and reading about it and building a whole exam management system there for universities. And then that's what became the main product. So that was essentially a huge system that would secure exam papers, help lecturers write papers, actually make it harder to cheat in papers. And that did really well. So we sold that to like Oxford, Cardiff, down in South Africa at Wits University and a number of different ones, Griffith College in Dublin. And then we were doing a seed round and then we had two offers to buy the business. You know, the good thing about having two offers, we were able to kind of play them off each other a little bit. And we got the best deal and we ended up selling to a company called Terminal 4, who are Irish and US based. Great company, really, really good. And I stayed on there for, you know, I think it was like 18 months, 2 years. And it was great. Learned so much from that, like so much from that. And then coming into Protex, like that kind of gave me that arsenal to really try to take this one to the next level.
So you must have had some competency. You must have had some confidence, at least, that you could, you know, build a software product. How did that come about? You know, have you always had an interest in tech businesses or software, or what's your kind of what's the foundation in behind all of this?
I didn't. I was like in college. I was like, I want to learn French and go work in the EU. That was my thing, and I just thought it was, and I had my heart set on that until like I'd say in the second year kind of college. So I never actually intended to, but then I just kind of, it was just, I think the thing about college is like, there's no excuse not to, if you want to like have any inkling or just doing your own thing, do it then, because the worst case you go back and you just go back to being a student, right? So I remember like, even like one time we were students and we had no money for the business. And we were just eating cereal for, I swear to God, I ate, I'd say about 40 bowls of Cocoa Pops for 2 weeks. But I'm like the Aldi kind, not even like the nice Kellogg's kind. And that's, you just deal with it with that. So I think it was just kind of that kind of aspect of things. And then we did an accelerator program there called Launchbox, and we won that. And then I was like, okay, this is cool. And I loved being kind of my own boss for it, like yourself, you know. And I mean, it was kind of just take it and just give it a go. And for both companies, like, I didn't have domain knowledge really in both of them, but it's just something like doing something. The coolest thing, but I remember our first ever customer was St. Michael's College. And this is like, which way you went to? And it was the first customer, and we just got in there, and it was like €80. It was something tiny, like, but it was the fact that we built something that someone else wanted and someone else would use. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever, that we could improve someone's life, that whether it be, you know, by a percent or something. But I just thought, okay, this is what I want to do.
You mentioned there about domain knowledge. What about the other knowledge that people might assume that they need in order to start a business, to grow a business successfully, and then ultimately to sell it? Were you at any stage thinking, I'm not the right person for this, or I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to figure this out, or I'm too young? Did those thoughts ever cross your mind? And if not, do you think it's just something innate? Do you think it's a confidence that you're born with? You know, what was it that kind of gave you the wherewithal to carry this out and to go for it?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. So every day that happens to me, you know, the imposter syndrome of like, am I the right person to take this forward? And then you kind of have to like back yourself. I remember one of my friends did a really good, he said a really good thing for me. He said, you know, you're always climbing to reach the summit, but you haven't turned around and looked at the views yet, which I thought was a really good kind of way. I know it's really kind of, you know, fluty or something like that, but it's just, it's really good to be able to do that and say, okay, well, what have I done to get to this at this point? Irish people, I remember in particular, someone told me a really good thing. If an Irish person tells you they're not very good at something, it actually means they're really, really good at it, you know? And it's just this Irishism we have. Whereas if you go to America, they're like, yes, I'm so good at this. Yeah, I'm so good at this. And this is what I'm really strong at. But Irish people are really, really bad at that. And we have a terrible problem with that. And that's why, you know, thankfully people are getting a lot better at it now. And there's a lot more kind of companies starting. But I think it's like, you know, you just got to give it a go. And again, maybe I was lucky doing it as a student. I didn't have, you know, kids or things like that were, you know, putting me on the back foot to say, well, I've got other things in my life I need to look after. I literally was going to college, was commuting in from Maynooth, and my biggest, you know, thing was where was I going tonight on night out, or, you know, how do I pay for my train ticket? And I was working a part-time job at the time, so that was grand. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a hard thing to get into. However, when you're in it, you do start getting that whole, you know, am I the right person? Like, even like with this company, it's a different breed altogether. And we were talking like doing Y Combinator and stuff like that, and talking to like about investment stuff. And I asked, would he come in at like a really small level? He had a G650ER or something like that, which is a private jet in his front garden. I'm literally sitting here, probably my boxers or something, because I'm on Zoom, and I don't really have the right to it. But then you have to think, well, they have to talk to someone, so why not me?
Take me back to that first meeting, right? That first sales meeting with St. Michael's College. Because I want to just pull up an example of this. What age would you have been at that stage?
Just going on 22, I think.
Just going on 22. Can you remember before that meeting being nervous? Can you remember, were these thoughts kind of coming up in your mind? And how did you prepare for it? And maybe how did it feel afterwards? I'm just trying to pull it back to, you know, 22-year-old with no domain knowledge, as you said, and potentially no, you know, tangible business skills. You know, going into this into this meeting, are you thinking this is a sales meeting? Are you thinking I'm just going to go in and be myself and hopefully that works out? What was your mindset at the time?
Sure. So the first meeting we had was actually a presentation to the 5th and 6th year, which was quite like 22 coming in. I probably looked about 16 at the time. Just the lack of hair on my face. But the thing about that was quite funny, because we were thrown in deep end at the get-go. We went in thinking we were talking to the principal, which is, it's funny, you almost have PTSD a little bit when you leave school. And walking into a classroom full of 5th-year and 6th-year Michael's boys who could probably tear you apart themselves just for fun. So it's a little bit daunting, but I think, like, I'm quite confident anyway, and I didn't want to show any weakness, but then we got it. We got it over the line, and it was great. I think everyone was kind of super supportive because it was kind of an obvious benefit, both from the students' ends and the teachers' ends. But after, it was amazing, and that's what I meant. Like it was the best feeling ever to say that we not only like there's a big difference between a product and a business. Anybody can make a product. Anybody can make like a bit of software. I say that being non-technical, but anybody can make something. A business is when people are willing to put their hand in the pocket. And that's a massive thing I think people miss out on. They're saying, well, would you use this? Like there's a massive, massive difference between the questions, would you use this and would you pay for this, pay to use this? Huge, huge, huge difference. And I think that's what people kind of fail to remember when they're building a business. So going into those meetings, we always went in with, okay, are people willing to pay for this? Then the fact that they were was an unbelievable feeling, you know, after it.
How many staff did that business end up having before you sold it?
So I think it was five part-time, full-time, two kind of full-time. So it was a small business, like it wasn't huge at all. It was a good playground, you know, it was where I learned about the tricks of the trade and stuff before kind of doing projects. So I've learned an incredible amount and even made mistakes. And you do make mistakes. No one does it perfectly for this business and trying to build this one off the back of the learnings from better examinations.
Do you think you're starting in a much better position now, having had that initial experience with the first business?
Oh, 100%. 100%. It's just not making the small things, like even like now, like we got ISO certified from the get-go. We put all the foundations in place now so we can grow really quickly rather than trying to find our feet as we go along.
What is Y Combinator and how did you get involved in it?
Sure. So Y Combinator is the world's kind of most renowned accelerator program in San Francisco. So the likes of Airbnb have gone through it, Dropbox, Stripe, Twitch, some massive, massive companies, like multi-billion dollar companies have gone through it. So that's what it kind of does. So basically, it was remote this year, unfortunately. Usually get you over to San Francisco, which would have been sweet. But especially Kieran, my co-founder, has never been to the States, let alone San Fran. So it's been good to bring him to Dunkin' Donuts. Yeah, this year was remote, but it was great because you kind of get to meet other startups. You grow during it, and the network they have is incredible. Like we were on calls with the Airbnb founders, the Stripe guys, Stripe brothers we were talking to, Flexport, or massive logistics company out there. They're huge. They're just turning over a billion this year or something. And we got the chat to tell them, you know, firsthand, which is really great.
How much advice then are you getting throughout that period that you're talking about getting certified, you know, and you're getting all the foundation in place for then to be able to scale up quickly as a lot of these companies do? How much of that knowledge came from this experience?
Yeah, it's funny, like Does Y Combinator revolutionize your business day to day? Probably not. Does it make you think big? Absolutely. So like I remember going in and we passed our like sales and like we still haven't fully launched either. You know, we're still kind of in the launch phase. It just makes you think massive because all these companies are like wanting to be the next billion dollar, the next unicorn, you know, and it's a race to be the unicorn out of everybody, which is, again, goes back to, like you said, the confidence thing, the imposter syndrome, like Jesus, like everybody you talk to there is either like ex Visa or ex Google or ex massive company, which is strange because you're kind of lumped in with them. And we're like, you know, Kieran's from Limerick, I'm from Maynooth and in Kildare. You're kind of like, what the hell am I doing here? But you just gotta compete with them. And it's like, it's not a competition, but it's definitely, okay, I got to do better than the next person with me. So it does make you, it doesn't change your day-to-day business. Like you said there, the certification, that was all our own decisions, but it does make you think really big and try to scale as quickly as possible.
What gave you the idea to apply to Y Combinator and what was the whole application process like and how ultimately did you find out that you had gotten in?
Y Combinator, if you don't know what it is, you're like, I don't really care what it is. But if you do know what it is or do know startups, you really, like, you can appreciate it. So when we ever were like doing calls, if we're like, oh, we do Y Combinator, and you can tell by the face straight away, people just don't give a shit. So what we did is we just applied for it, shot in the dark, 99% sure we weren't going to get it. And then we got a message saying to submit a video for it. So we did that and we did over Zoom and it was, to be fair, it was kind of cute. Like we tried to play the whole Irish thing and like had a pint of Guinness at the end and cheers through the screen, like through the Zoom, and had like a virtual clink and stuff, which I feel like was the reason they accepted us because it was kind of creative. And then we just did that. And then we one interview with the partners, a guy called Dalton Caldwell, who's an absolute machine of man. And that was it. And then they basically email you if you don't get it and they call you if you do get it. I remember sitting, lying in bed at like, I don't know why, I was on TikTok or something. at like 2 a.m., just that infinite scroll thing. And I had this American number call, and I was like, no way, not a chance. And it was him. And he just offered his place. And I think I was the first one to say to him that, could I think about it? I don't know why I said it, but I was like, can we think about it for a bit? We're just organizing some things internally. And he goes, so you don't want to do it? I was like, no, we do want to do it. I just want to think about it, make sure I'm restored the decision. And thankfully, he's pretty lenient with that. They don't bargain. It's a take it or leave it deal, which is funny. But it was great. And we started that in June.
So what's the process like then once you go in? You're with how many other startups are in it at the same time?
It depends. Changes every year. We had quite a big batch. We had like 250, 300, something like that. So it's quite a lot of number of companies. Sometimes they go down to 180.
What kind of stage are these startups usually at?
Usually between kind of like pre-seed, which is where we were, to seed, but then some are turning over like a million now ARR. I know Stripe, when they came in, are turning over like multi-millions. So it's really dependent, but usually they're kind of like earlier stages.
So you go in, I suppose doing it remote was going to be slightly different. Are there classroom trainings? You know, what way is kind of a day-to-day actually set up for the few months that you're going through the process?
Yeah, I think if you're out there, it's a lot more kind of, you know, you're in the building the whole time, but we were able to dip in and out, which was nice. It's funny, we didn't know it was remote until like 2 weeks into it. So we were like checking up top 10 things to do in TripAdvisor and stuff. And then we were talking to him and we were like, where should we live? And he's like, you're not coming over here.
Oh, very disappointing.
Yeah, I know. So funny. And we were literally like in lashing rain. I remember sitting in Limerick and I was like, why the hell am I in Limerick and everyone's in San Fran? So yeah, so it's a mixture of like classroom stuff, like you mentioned, like small group talks. Then you have your big batch talks. So your batch is like everybody that's in it. And then you have your groups, which are part of the batch. So there's four groups for us. We were part of group three. And yeah, it kind of changes. So they get some really cool speakers in. They do like deep dives on like, and some of it's related to you, some of it's not. Like we're very much SaaS focused. We would go to a lot more of those talks. But it's really optional. The biggest thing for them is they don't want to be like getting you to fill out forms or doing you like a, like the amount of business model canvases I've done over the past 10 years is ridiculous, but they don't get to do any of that. It's just all about your business and focusing on your business, which is how it should be.
Do Y Combinator actually invest in things themselves? How does that whole process work?
Yeah, so they give you 125K to just do the program, which is nice. So they become an investor, but the real power is like, you don't really do it for that. You do it for the links after. So there's a thing called Demo Day, and Demo Day is like a 3 hour, it's more actually, I think it's like a 3 or 4 hour thing. And you have a 1 minute pitch and that's it. And there's hundreds of thousands of people watching you. Not hundreds of thousands, probably thousands of people watching you. It's not like the World Cup, but they're just watching you and it's like cued in, go. And you're just on, you're live for 1 minute and you got to convince people. We did a really good demo day. I'm convinced the only reason we got a really good demo day was because we had a fantastic camera setup, whereas everybody else was just on their webcam for some reason. I don't know why. We're on the webcam, you're just looking up their nostrils and stuff, which isn't as appealing, but we have one friend in Limerick who has like a Alan Wickstead. He's an absolute legend. But he had a Netflix like level camera. So that looked really good and it was live. And then we got like 75 leads off the back of it. And they're just investors who want to talk to you, which is cool, you know, rather than the other way around. So that's how you kind of get your leads into the funding world.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think maybe there's a little bit of the Irishness coming through there, is that, oh, we only got 75 leads because our camera was so good, you know, rather than our pitch and our business might have been actually interesting to these billionaires who were sitting on the other side. So yeah, you would hope. I just want to talk a little bit more about Y Combinator, why it's such a big deal. My knowledge of it from before was based off this guy, Paul Graham, who I believe is one of the founder, if not maybe the only founder of the program. Just tell us a little bit about the history of Y Combinator. I know you've already mentioned a few companies that have been through the process, how they started day one and, you know, what it looks like today.
Yeah, funny enough, Paul actually just surprised everybody in one of the calls and just popped on. I kind of knew of him. I know people are like bigger fans of him than, not that I'm not a fan, of him, geez, but I didn't know him as much. To be honest, I don't actually know a whole lot about the history of it. I just know it just has such a reputation. I think it's what everything was founded on. Like even there's a thing called, it's a type of funding called safe funding. So safe funding is basically not, usually the standard funding is like this price equity around this call. So you actually give equity for cash. So if an investor invests in you, you give X percentage, which is like the Dragon's Den thing, which you think of. How safes work is it's almost like a written promise. So, okay, you have caps. So like I'll invest in you like a million at like a 10 million caps, that's 10%. And that's kind of how that kind of works. But there's no exchanging of shares or anything like that. So there's no lawyers involved. So I don't actually know the history of it. I know they've kind of like just set the foundations of what startup is really. And Michael Siebel, who's like the head of it, is just a super, they're just super impressive. They talk to you almost like they're your children, which is funny. They're like, you got that? Did you get that? Did you understand? Which is really funny because everyone's like adults.
And you'd assume quite intelligent given the businesses that they're in. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So
it's gotten to this point where you can kind of look at the startups that have come through it and the successful startups. So I think, you know, Stripe is obviously a big one for anyone who's in Ireland listening to this. That's clearly, you know, a global company that started here in Ireland. Talk to me a little bit about just your own goals now for the future with this business and how you think about that. What do you want for this business? What do your investors want for this business? And where do you see it going?
Yeah, so you're totally right. The last business was kind of a bit of fun, but we were kind of helping a lot of people from our day-to-day side of things. Now with Protex, just given what we're doing and what we can do, we want to totally change how people look at safety. Computer vision is a fantastic tool, but it's only getting started and it's only going to get more and more popular over the next decade. So we want to totally change how people look at safety and how the market looks at it and how people look at it. You know, they don't have to wait now until someone gets hurt or don't have to wait until something happens to something about it. We're giving them the tools and trying to empower our customers to totally revolutionize their safety stacks. And it's something we can do. We're proving it, even though we're kind of still in launch phase. My goals over the next kind of few years is to build that and to give people the opportunity to stop accidents before they occur, which is we do things backwards at Protex. Like to say that to stop accidents before things happen sounds something like out of Star Wars or something, but it definitely is possible because we're looking at the behavior side of things and it's something we really want to achieve. And we've got some really great partners and the team as well is fantastic. We got like between Patrick and Garode and Palash and Sachin and Suhani and Kieran. We're really doing well of kind of setting the foundations to grow really quickly and help a lot of people.
It's almost more about the mission. You're not talking to me about we want to get to X amount of revenue or whatever else. Is that important to you? Where have you picked it up from? Or is it something that's innate? What is it about solving this problem that is worth focusing on rather than building a massive company and, you know, the metrics that some people might jump to initially when thinking about a business?
Yeah, well, that'll follow. You know, a mission is different to getting revenue. I think if you go in saying, "Hey, we want to, we want to sell the business," and blah blah blah, you'll never, you know, give your whole heart to it. I think if you have a really good mission and you have a really good purpose, money follows. And that's what we're seeing. You know, we're kind of proving it already in what we're doing. We've already got really good customers involved, and we haven't even fully implemented with them. But these are all customers, and they're great customers that really want to change what they're doing and be innovative. And be at the cutting edge of what safety is. So I think, yes, you can look at the metrics and yes, they may be for like investor talks and things like that. However, I think having a really good mission and having a really good purpose is the base of what you can build on, and money is part of that build.
Talk to me now about getting customers, okay? And I suppose the customers, without naming any names, are global companies. That's who your customers are. That's what it's shaping up to be. What are those meetings like? Take me through that whole process and what it kind of looks like.
Yeah, so our customers, so how we deal with them. So yeah, you're right. We do have kind of household names, which is cool. And that's you know, a little bit on purpose. We will start with the people we know. So we basically do like we just call them, and we've worked a few through partners, a few through investors, a few just kind of cold outreach. We look for, you know, advice off them a little bit. And then we kind of stem the conversation into kind of where we wanted to go. But we do a demo. I think the cool thing about vision companies, you get it straight away. You know, you see it. It's not like, okay, we have to wait for this metric to come in. You can see the problem happening and things like that. Yeah, you know, I've got one piece of advice, which is ask for money, get advice. Ask for advice, get money twice. And I always ask people like, I'll give you a go. Like, who do you think? I don't know if I said it to you before, but do you know who said that quote? So ask for money, get advice.
No, I've never heard it before.
Yeah, so lots of people think it's like Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or Indra Nooyi from Pepsi or something, but it's actually Pitbull. It's in his song "Feel This Moment," which no one gets, and then Christina Aguilera comes in with a beautiful course. But it's a great one because I think if people think that they're going to be sold to, then they tend to tend to not answer the phone, but we generally go look for advice off people. And I think just what we're doing and people align with our strategy and our vision to kind of come on board with that, which is nice.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
Tell me, so if you can think of an example of a mistake or something that's happened, whether it was in your first business or whether it's in the current business, just a setback, maybe something that happened and how you've overcome that. And the reason I'm asking is it's good to get a sense of, I think people listening to this may not have their own businesses and they may think that what you're doing is impossible. And I want to kind of normalize it and show that, you know, everyone has these problems when they go into business and to talk through it like that. So if you can think of any, that would be great.
Sure. Yeah. I guess similar to what I mentioned before was the whole thing of understanding what people are willing to pay for. So there's a big difference between something that's a need to have and a nice to have. So a lot of people say, hey, that's really cool. Yeah, I'd love to have something like that. But there's a big difference between I'd love to have something like that and yeah, I'd love to have something like that. I'm actually willing to pay for it, which is an interesting one, because and I think that's what a lot of people have mistakes with. We thankfully cut it out early, and that's why we pivoted our last business with Better Examinations. We started with a past paper system that was really, really widely used, but actually wasn't making that much money, even though there's a lot of people on it. So then we said, okay, well, where is there, you know, a really big need, but also there was kind of a revenue stream behind it. And that's where we moved into universities for that. And we thankfully spotted, well, did we do it early? Probably not, probably like within a year, but a year for us was kind of college and stuff. So we had time to experiment. So that was really kind of useful. I think understanding that early, like you see a lot of people say, oh, I want to make an app that does X, Y, Z, which is great. There's fantastic apps out there, but unless you're going to be a paid one app, there's really no point in doing it. I don't think anyway. I think like unless someone has that, you know, active usage every single day or once a week where they're on their homepage, like if you think of like obviously the main social media apps, but then you go outside that. So like the likes of Garmin's and things like that, like running watches or bits like that or organization tools. They're kind of ones that people would use every day. They're the ones that are powerful. Understanding like how often people are doing it, because the more often they use it, the more dependent they are on it, which means you can charge money for it. So it's important to kind of understand where that lies.
Do you think that has been, you've brought that into what you're doing now with Protex? Is that something you thought about from the start?
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, we really wanted to find something that people were willing. And it goes back to, I remember I mentioned before the whole thing of building a purpose around a business, and money will follow if it's really creating value for people. And there's a guy I used to work with, Paul McCarthy, who has a company called SnapFix down in Dunleary. And he, every single time he's talking, he always says overwhelming value. We want to create overwhelming value. And that's such a staple of that company now. And I worked with them for a little while. And that was that just stuck with me, just creating this overwhelming value. So it's an interesting one. Or I kind of just focusing in on what are you actually doing, taking a step back from your business and saying, well, what am I creating here? Is it something that I just think it's cool? Or is it actually something that's worthwhile? Like I'm helping out a startup who had an idea to basically create like a Airbnb for young professionals, but it started out as just kind of a cool thing that nobody would pay for. And now we've kind of structured that into a payment model and things like that. And it's becoming a lot more kind of effective in our approach for that.
Do you have mentors, coaches, or maybe even just less formal people that you would talk to about business and everything else?
Yeah, I do actually. Some really cool people. One guy who helped me a lot was Gavin Cooney. He had a company called Learnosity. Still does. It's in Australia, but he's an Irish guy. It was great just to bounce ideas off. And two notes on that, actually. It just reminded me of something. I feel like some startups feel like they can't tell anybody their idea, which is really detrimental, because you want to get your idea out there, but people think someone's going to steal it. No one's really going to steal your idea. If they are there, well, I've never had someone kind of steal it. There are kind of like think tank teams across the world who will try to copy stuff, but your average Joe sitting across the bar or something isn't going to see your idea for that. On the mentor side of things, I think people are really surprised with how likely people are to respond and say, yeah, I wouldn't mind a call. Like I remember I used this thing of saying, hey, do you have 10 minutes free over the next 2 weeks? Because everybody has 10 minutes free over the next 2 weeks. And if they don't, that means they definitely don't want to talk to you. And then you get your no straight away, which generally people do. And then you hold them for like half an hour. But I had some great people. Like one guy who's involved in our business now is Sam Nager, who sold his business for, you know, a crazy, I don't even know the specific figure, but, you know, up to, you know, eight, nine figures, more even to Siemens. And he's brilliant. He just kind of gets it. I feel like the people at the top, like the CEOs and the CIOs, the C-suites, tend to be the ones that are most valuable. Because if you go to kind of middle managers, and they're fantastic for like mentoring and things like that, they're great, but they're they're not kind of the visionaries on things, and they're really valuable. Have you ever come across Grad Guide before, for those guys?
No, never.
So Grad Guide, they're an Irish company run by a guy called Mark Hughes, one of my good friends from college, and they actually link up college students with mentors across like Google and HubSpot and stuff. And it's a great way to kind of get a foot in the door with understanding what you want to do.
So do you would value having mentors and having people that have maybe just gone a little bit ahead of you in a different industry or something like that? You would value having that advice and everything else?
Yeah, I think it's just learning from the battle scars, you know? And again, like I've learned loads from my last company that I've learned from. And there's hundreds of thousands of people out there that have gone 10 times, 20 times what I've done in relation to living. So there definitely wants to learn from. And people are very happy to share, you know? I think everybody likes talking about themselves. Maybe that's why I agreed to the podcast and stuff. But everybody likes to know like how they got to where they are. And they're very happy. Well, I find everybody I've talked to are very happy to share that.
Tell me what you mentioned there just about telling people about your ideas and that no one's going to steal them. But you mentioned just you have to get your idea out there. Talk to me about that. You know, how important is it to really be telling people about your ideas or telling people what you want to do?
Yeah, I think you have to have a soundboard. I know some solo founders that kind of struggle with this, being able to bounce ideas off people. Just because like I thankfully, and I think it's really important to start a company as a team rather than an individual. Not only just for, you know, some people kind of, not that it's not greed or anything, but just like, I want to own the whole thing, which is great. But I do think, unless you're like, you know, the Shane Kearns of the world, like Evervault, who's absolutely machine with that kind of stuff, it's quite hard to start a company on your own. I found it really beneficial from a psyche perspective, just being able to get it off my chest and stuff. And from your mental health, it's really, really great, because especially in startup land, it's so cyclical in how you feel. The highs sometimes don't outweigh the lows, and it can be really difficult sometimes. But sharing your ideas is really important. It's about getting out there. It's about getting soundboards. It's about getting different opinions. You don't have to take those opinions on board, but it's just understanding it. And the best companies are really, really good at pivoting early if they need to. No Loco is another Irish company. They're fantastic at that. They're able to understand the problems from the get-go and change when they need to. But it's really important to just get out there and talk to people, because at the end of the day, if you want to start a company, you have to get out there. You have to, you know, it is risk reward a little bit, but you have to be able to say, hey, I'm really confident in it, but but also saying that I'm also fully aware that I'm not the expert in a field, in whether it be sales or it be marketing or it be finance. You need to be able to you know, take the finger out and say, hey, I actually need a bit of help here.
Yeah, we had a guy in the podcast a little over a year ago now. His name is Norman Crowley, and he had the opinion that you should be telling everyone what your goals are, because if you can tell people what your goals are, it actually puts a little bit more pressure on you to try and achieve them, and it kind of gets it out there. And I don't think he mentioned the universe, but I don't want to go down that route certainly, but I think that was kind of what he was getting at.
Yeah, it's a good one. Although on that point, though, I also think like, what is it? Comparison is the killer of joy, I think it is. And a little bit kind of sense into that is if you worry, I think, to be honest, in the last like year or so, I've just kind of gotten over, I couldn't give a shite what people think about me, which has stemmed a lot to kind of me dealing with pressure and dealing with different things like that. Because I think I know some people who really, really care, and they'll make business decisions based off what people think about them, which isn't a good idea. You know, you should be doing it for you and the team. And there's always going to be someone better, unless you're like a LeBron James or a Serena Williams kind of job of that. Someone's always going to be better than you. And I think accepting that makes it a lot easier to handle those kind of stresses.
It's certainly something I've noticed from guests on the podcast, they do care less what people think. They're very internally focused rather than external. From what I can see anecdotally, it seems like a good mindset to have. On a little bit of self-reflection, what do you think are your key strengths going into this business for being able to run this business? You know, what are you most confident of?
Yeah, it's funny. We just mentioned the whole Irishism thing of just saying not very good things. So I still find it hard to point out what I'm good at. I guess that's good having a co-founder. Kieran's fantastic. He'll send me the odd co-founder appreciation post, which always bigs me up, which is nice. I think my big thing is. And maybe it stems from just me really liking people, is relationships. I love building relationships. I love talking to people. And I think because I really, really enjoy it, I'm quite good at it. I don't see it as work at all. Just talking to people and whether it be customers, whether it be employees, whether it be whoever, you know, I really, really enjoy it. And because I enjoy it, I tend to be good at that element. But also on the other end, you know, things I'm not great at, obviously financials, because we're working with the fantastic company that is JetBooks, and plug that one in. But that kind of stuff, you know. But I think self-reflection is really important with that. And it doesn't have to be a big journal or anything like that, or a reading book. I actually don't read. I'm actually a terrible, terrible reader. Swear to God, the last book I read independently outside school was Captain Underpants, but I read the whole series, so I feel like that was a good dedication to it. But being able to notice your weaknesses is just as important as understanding your strengths.
Your weaknesses tend to be just the opposite side of the same coin. So your strengths, for example, you love kind of being out talking to people, getting feedback, and doing all that side of things. Whereas the kind of quiet, focused reading, for example, is just the opposite of that, you know, which is what you're not good at. And it's kind of, there's a sweet spot there in the middle, I suppose.
That's a really good point, actually. I never thought about it that way.
We've talked a little bit about what you want for this business and everything else. What do the next couple of years look like? And hopefully beyond that, what do those years look like?
Yeah, it really is a case of, like, I'm always learning. You know, I'm 27 now. I'm kind of hoping that's considered youngish. Although I was in a 30 under 30 thing recently enough, and I was like, geez, everybody's real young here. And Kieran's 24, who's my co-founder, and he's like, no, you're just getting old. So that was a terrible, terrible feeling. But moving forward, like, I just want to keep learning, you know, learning every day. My team's fantastic, and on, you know, learning from them and just sitting and absorbing, like kind of an osmosis kind of job, just from what's going around. So over the next 2 years, I just want to keep learning on the sales, learning how to run a business more effectively, and learning from other people. I always think, like, it's kind of like they always say, you'll never get product market fit. I also never think you'll ever get founder market fit. You always have to keep reaching for that goal of doing it. But it's funny, it's not something you can say, yeah, I've done it and tick it off the list. It's always a case of checking out the next thing. So over the next few years, I just want to, from my own personal goals, is to develop that side of my skill set. From the company side of things, you know, we're already doing kind of really well on understanding our customers more and more each day. We thankfully have fantastic customers that are really great for us, that they're very happy to, you know, open their doors and say, this is what we're doing and this is how we think it could be better. And like the Doyle Shipping Group have been fantastic. Mark Lawless, and that is a brilliant guy, and he's been absolutely pivotal for us. And we're getting there over the next years. We're kind of launching full scale over the next 12 months, and hopefully we'll be, you know, an international company in the not too distant future.
If there's anyone listening to this that might be able to help you in any way, what would you say to them, and how might they get in touch?
Yeah, so I'd love to talk to, if there is anyone actually, I've thought about that, who's involved in the whole manufacturing or logistics space. Love to chat to them. Easiest way to get through me is probably my email, which is dan.hobbs@protex.ai. But yeah, I, like I said, I like talking to people anyway. I think you can learn from every single conversation. As my dad says, everybody puts their pants on the same way every morning. So everyone has something to give. But yeah, specifically on the logistics and safety space, it's always an area I want to learn more and more about, even if I do have to do a bit of reading. But it's a lot easier if someone telling you it, for sure.
Well, you're certainly off to a very good start, and we wish you the very best of luck with Protex in the years to come. Dan Hobbs, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks.
an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.